Australian tweens have had a comprehensive health check as part of a long-running survey of children. The Child Health Checkpoint looked at a wide range of health data in 11 and 12-year-olds, and it's found Aussie kids are broadly healthy. But there are some concerning results in the mix too. ABC Science reporter Carl Smith has the story.
I'd like to have at least 9 hours of sleep a night, and talking to my friends about at school. Some are only getting 6 or 7.
Lucy is 12 years old. She lives in Sydney and she reckons she's pretty fit and healthy, at least compared to her friends.
Overall, I think I do a lot of sport, about an hour a day, I guess. Compared to the people I go to school with, they just go home and go on their devices. My friends, I feel like, do have a lot more sugary drinks and like chocolate and lollies and a lot of sugary foods.
Lucy's assessment of her peers seems to be pretty accurate, based on a new health check of more than 1,800 11 and 12-year-olds across the country.
Well, the good news is that Australian kids are actually pretty healthy. In comparison to kids in the rest of the world, we're doing well or we're doing the same.
Professor Melissa Wake from the Murdoch Children's Research Institute helped lead this project.
The less good news is that 3% of the children were already frankly hypertensive. 27% of kids were overweight or obese. That's not a surprise, but it's not good news either. It hasn't changed over the last 10 years. We know that high body weight underlies so many of the conditions that older adults experience. So things like diabetes, heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, all of those kind of big ticket items, you're more risk of those if you're overweight or obese. So it's concerning when we see children who've already been overweight or obese for 10 years.
The longitudinal study of Australian children, also known as Growing Up in Australia, has been collecting basic health data on a nationally representative cohort of randomly selected children across the country since 2004. When those children reached 11 or 12 years old, they were asked whether they'd like to join this one-off comprehensive checkup.
We know that first decade of a child's life really sets them up. It shapes them for the adults that they're going to become. So the only way to measure how kids are lining up is to actually take measurements using pretty high-tech equipment that has only now just become small enough, sophisticated enough, fast enough to take out to the field on this scale. So as well as taking all of these measurements for the kids, we also took the same measurements from their parents, which is really quite unique. We measured every single thing that we could pack into a 3.5-hour assessment. Vision, we looked at hearing, we looked at language, health of the large arteries, the microvasculature, lung function, lung size, bone shape, strength, geometry, kidney health.
One of the more worrying findings of the survey was that Australian children have reasonably sedentary lifestyles. Many aren't getting enough physical activity, plus they're spending lots of time in front of screens and sitting down.
I think the majority of my day, yeah, I haven't really thought about it, but a lot of my day is spent sitting down.
How much screen time do you think you have, and do you have limits?
At home, we're limited to 1 hour of screen time, except we go over that a little bit. And then at school, I've got my laptop and I spend quite a bit of time on that. Almost every subject requires the laptop.
Professor Tim Olds from the University of South Australia led one of the 15 peer-reviewed papers that was published along with this new survey data. This study looked specifically at physical activity.
We had very detailed information on how they used their time. So we fitted them up with accelerometers, wrist-warm accelerometers, a bit like Fitbits. We did computerised time use diaries.
And there are quite shocking statistics in some ways on this front. 21 hours that kids are sitting still or not moving.
That's true. They don't actually shock me all that much. They're pretty much what I expected. But yeah, in this group of 11, 12-year-old kids, and this is the objectively measured data that measured by these Fitbit-like devices, we found they sleep about 9.5 hours a night, which is within the recommended range of 9 to 11 hours. But also they sit for about 11 to 11.5 hours a day. So when you add those two together, that only gives them a little over 3 hours a day when they're actually on their feet. And of those 3 hours, only 30 minutes, 32 minutes on average, they actually engaged in moderate to vigorous physical activity, which is running and playing sports and so forth.
And it's 60 minutes that's recommended for kids of that age?
The recommended is 60 minutes per day as at a minimum. And so there are not many kids who meet those guidelines, particularly on every day of the week.
You did notice a difference between boys and girls, didn't you?
Yeah, this is very consistent. Almost every study around the world, almost every country, at almost every age, boys are more active than girls.
They also documented how kids are using their time.
About 40% of it is sitting at school. About 30% or 3.5 hours is screen time, mainly television. And the remaining 30% is pretty evenly divided between transport, eating, and basically just chilling out.
That data has been picked up by several mastheads with headlines such as zombie children here in Australia and too much time spent sitting and watching TV. Do you believe those headlines accurately capture the state of how kids are using their time?
Well, I think zombie may be over the top a bit. So we talk now not about individual aspects of time use, but about activity compositions or activity mixes. You can think of it as a kind of activity diet. And so the question we're really trying to answer is, what's the best activity diet? What's the best activity composition? And the way we've done this is to have a look at a whole range of health outcomes: blood pressure, blood lipids, inflammatory status, fatness, quality of life, even academic performance. And from that, we've been able to find what we call a Goldilocks day. And it turns out that for kids this age, it falls to about 9.5 to 11.5 hours of sleep. So a little bit more than they're getting, but pretty much close to the recommended range. Less than 8 hours of sitting. Now remember, they actually sit about 11 hours a day, these kids. And about 4 to 7 hours of being on their feet or being physically active, and they actually get about 3 to 3.5 hours. So to get an optimal mix, they'd need to shift some time from sitting towards particularly physical activity or just at least moving around.
So what do we imagine the health impact then of not getting that optimal mix might be on children of this generation, of this cohort?
Yeah, we can actually model that. We can actually model the effects. And the bottom line is that shifting any time at all from any other time domain into moderate to vigorous physical activity has a uniformly positive effect, and a strong positive effect. That's the best thing you can do, up to quite a high level of physical activity. So I mean, schools have been great in this department. Obviously the kids have to sit at some stage of school, but schools have got a lot of really good initiatives. One is to have this active learning where they actually build activity into their lessons. The problem seems to arise at home. So a couple of recent studies have shown that the entire increase of fatness in children occurs over the summer holiday periods. And yeah, I think we do need now to pay attention to what happens at home.
Professor Olds says increased screen time is worrying, partly because there's a strong correlation between time spent watching television and poorer health for children.
We don't know really why that's so. There are a number of theories. One is perhaps they just sit really still while they're watching television, or at least they're getting some movement when they're playing video games and using a computer. Another is that when they watch television, they're much more likely to snack. They're exposed to snack food advertising. But I actually think that it's more that television is a marker of a whole lot of things that are going on in the life of those kids. If they're in homes where they watch a lot of television, they're less likely to have good diets, they're less likely to have more vigorous physical activity, a generally troublesome lifestyle.
And children in lower socioeconomic households watched about an hour more television compared to those in higher income households. Professor Melissa Wake says the data shows economic or social disadvantage is linked to a wide range of poorer health outcomes.
Kids who are poorer or more deprived than other kids seems to be getting under their skin, if you like, in their vessels, in their kidneys, everything. And that's really concerning when that's happening as young as 11 to 12 years of age. Where we're interested in taking this further is to say, well, what's the actual mechanisms by which that happens and what could be done about it?
This suite of data and the associated papers is published together in a special edition of the journal BMJ Open, and all of the data has been made publicly available. BMJ Open's editor-in-chief is Adrian Aldcroft.
The importance of this research is that it will inform policy in the future. So we know where the problems are, we know where the focus of treatment should be. So we thought it was such a large, important study that it was something we were really interested in publishing in BMJ Open. We do occasionally receive proposals from research groups to publish a series of articles, but this is actually the first time we've really taken 15 different research papers. Usually we see cohort studies focusing on one specific thing, but this is clearly a really broad and far-reaching research project. By making the data available to other researchers and collaborators, it's really saving the public money, because now we don't have to do these additional cohort studies on a whole new set of participants. We don't require data to be openly available, but we very much encourage it. And it's really great to see the study taking the lead on this. I think it was really forward-thinking their approach, and they've done things like including user manuals and data dictionaries to help people understand where the data came from and how to use it.
There's a huge amount of waste in the way we do research typically. So we might spend 5-10 years mounting a single study that can look at a single question, and then the money runs out. So what we were really setting out to do was to create an open science resource that could be open to all researchers, so that as many researchers and analysts as possible could bring different questions to it and answer them quickly in the future.
So based on this preliminary data and analysis, what could we do to improve health outcomes for 11 and 12-year-olds in Australia?
There's pretty strong evidence that behaviours and health outcomes track from childhood right through to adulthood. And so a small deflection at the beginning of that trajectory may make a big change at the end of the trajectory. Physical activity is the big ticket item. It is the one which is really strongly correlated with almost every health outcome you can imagine. Even an extra 15 or 30 minutes a day can make a huge difference.
Eat a healthy, varied diet, get good sleep, be physically active, get a really good balance in everything that you do. And there's always the possibility of making changes.
I don't think my friends or people my age think about this. I think they just live their life. Sometimes that might not be so healthy.
12-year-old Lucy, ending that story from ABC Science reporter Carl Smith.